Hello, my OnlyFans fans, or my Lost Boys and Girls. You may have noticed I'm wearing an apron. Well, I thought we'd do something a little bit different today for the live stream. I know you're used to more show than tell, but I felt like I wanted to tell you a story. So I'm going to bake in an apron and a teddy and tell you a story. So where to begin? Thank you for the compliment. I'm glad you like what I'm wearing. My sister called yesterday, and she wanted to know why my new apartment is 700 plus miles away from just about everyone I know. That I spent my pandemic baking skills on bagels and twisting things, curating croissants. And she asked, who's going to eat all that stuff? That's a reasonable question. If I had a tenth of what I bake, then I might not fit out my door, and, well, this teddy might be a little tighter. But, you know, more love. It goes to the cute grad student downstairs. Well, that's a different story. For me, baking isn't about production or consumption. I mean, sure, I enjoy a good baguette as much as anybody else. But for me, it's a happy trip down memory lane. So, in 98, I took a gap semester and I moved to London. Still can't believe my mom said yes and helped me finance that. She was always so protective. So when I got there, I shared a tiny flat with a girl I'd known in school and worked at Waterstones by Covent Garden's Underground. London was a lot. Scary big for little old me. My family wasn't rural, but I did grow up in suburbia. And in this strange city that barely sleeps, I generally stuck close to the flat. I can still see it so clearly. Directly across from the tube station, just down from the bookstore I loved, and there was a cafe. Aroma now, I think. But back then it was just called Matisse. So in my time off, not wanting to stray too far, I'd sit in the cafe. They had two little tables outside, and I'd sip a foamy coffee and escape the stuffy flat, try to feel more like an adult, really. Looking back, I suppose three sugars maybe gave away that I was 19, a bit lonely, feeling far from home. Side note, carbs were not demonized back then. It was fat, so if you got a fat-free something foamy, you were killing it. So imagine London. Before Oyster Cards, the new Tate had just opened, the Channel was long done, and the Jubilee extension was still under construction. One late Sunday that summer, I was sipping my coffee when a fare card literally floated into my lap. I'd been catching up on reading, and the card caught my attention. That's how I met Henry. Henry was a baker's apprentice at Matisse. 22, from Lisbon. He was spending 6 months in London, sharing a flat above the shop with two others. But one had been called home by an emergency, and his replacement was months away. The other stayed out as much as humanly possible. Apparently, the stuffy flat was too much for a boy who was used to acres and acres of grapevines. Henry's flat. I can almost smell it. There was only one good thing about that flat. The kitchen could fit a table and a sizable oven in it. And it was in that kitchen that I became Henry's apprentice in baking and in love. Not one more than the other, really, but both at the same time. That's why I bake. I asked him the next day how they got the brioches so light and so buttery. And he invited me up to learn that evening. Brioche wants time, he said. I'm terrible at his accent, so I won't even try. He always talked about what doughs wanted or needed, like they were alive. And in a way, it's true. You make it at night and bake it the next day, he said. Brioche is an enriched dough, so eventually the dough becomes quite pliable and soft. But when you start to mix, and we always mixed by hand because, crazy, it's sticky as hell. So there wasn't much I could do with my hands stuck to the dough. when he kissed me that first time. Asking for consent wasn't as much of a thing back then. So he stood behind me, his arms over mine, showing me exactly how to knead the dough, and he leaned in and he kissed my neck. My hair was up in a messy bun, so it's very available. I was suddenly very, very aware of him. The heat of his body against mine. His hands, which a moment before had just been two hands teaching, they became something I admired. I noticed the way his baker's biceps pressed on my shoulders, his chest pushing against my back, his hips lightly grazing near the small of my back. I am pretty short. I think I let out a gasp, and he quickly backed off, thinking, I imagine, that his kiss wasn't welcome. So I turned, and my hands came away from the table, still holding that sticky mess of brioche. I looked in his eyes, which had gone not wary, but cautious. Aptly so, he took a risk. But I tilted my head up and kissed his mouth. Today, I'm not 19, and I'm not a virgin, clearly. So it may be hard for you to imagine how daring and just how bold that was for me at the time. Never having been kissed isn't quite accurate, but I would say never been loved. Most certainly never had been fucked. So I'm sure I surprised him as much as I surprised myself, because it took him a moment to relax into my kiss. I've always loved that moment of falling. That first moment of contact feels like you shouldn't, and it feels like you have to, and I don't know, surrender, I guess. But I'd never felt it before like I did then. Henry's arms around me were, I don't know, like a tunnel where you can see the light at the end. And I went, and I went, and I went. In some ways, I'm still driving in that tunnel now. From that point forward, it was romance and baking. We would stretch out the baklava dough and then kiss in the corner. He would teach me to knead by softly cradling my breasts. His only rule was clothes on in the kitchen unless the dough was away, rising, baking. He was really serious about food safety, which I guess, you know, a real baker has to be. But that never stopped him from sliding a hand up my skirts which I found myself wearing more often, advancing a hand up my shirt, pressing against the small of my back as I dusted off a sandwich loaf. He loved to pull on my nipples, braless under my tank top, whisper in my ear, softly, softly, let the dough stretch on its own. He'd talk about the way the proteins lengthened in the dough and would demonstrate by pulling on his cock in his pants. You know, me today, I'm experienced. I can articulate sexy words. I can say cunt. I can talk about cum without blushing. Say cock. But then, I lacked the confidence, the vocabulary. Even so, I knew what I wanted in my bones. Even if I couldn't put a name on it, Henry taught me to own it, to own my sensuality. We'd been baking and, well, more, for a week the first time. The first time I was brave enough to look him in the eye, standing there with his back against the edge of the sink in his tight pants. Brave enough to tell him that I wanted to see it. I gestured at the bulge I'd been rubbing. I knew its outline, its form, but I wanted its texture. I wanted to know its taste. I'm quite sure he knew what I meant. I just had my hands on his cock. But he drew it out. It, he asked. My wallet? My fare card? such a brat. I can remember his smile, how wide it was. It, I said, reaching a hand back to his jeans. He just smiled again, checked that the pumpernickel was covered, and pulled me close. Here, he asked, and I nodded. He allowed it, of course. I mean, he was still a guy, and it was still his kitchen, his rules. But first he held me at arm's length. He looked me in the eyes. He said, name it. It, I ventured. Your penis? He shook his head with a smile. A boy has a penis. A lover has a cock. Gave me shivers. I think I was even shaking a bit. I was so out of my depth, but I nodded and I took a deep breath. Can I see your cock? I asked, straight, clear as I could. Henry's smile broadened. But of course, he said. I knelt there at his feet in the kitchen. As I settled, I looked up, waiting. He was waiting too. Come on, I protested. I'm sure my face was starting to flush. Felt like it was on fire. Lesson one, he told me. If you want to see the cock, you take it out. I raised up on my knees and reached for his belt. Slowly, he said. He took off his apron as I unbuckled his belt. Maybe not suave or smooth like I can nowadays, but I did all right. The fly in his jeans was all buttons. To this day, the sound of a button fly opening gives me a glow. You can take out my cock, he permitted, and I saw he was bare under his jeans. He'd showered when he came in, and I could smell the soap and the rye together, the pumpernickel. I reached in, and as gently as possible, I removed him from his jeans. I'd seen a boy's penis once or twice, you know, before that trip, but it was nothing like this. I know now, of course, that Henry wasn't a giant, that his cock was maybe slightly above average at best. But to me, at the time, it was massive. Massive, as I held it in my hands. He wasn't circumcised, and that was new to me, Europe and all. I placed my hand on top of it like a sandwich and let it sit, pulsing and jumping, hot and hard in my hands. I remember noticing that it throbbed with his pulse and thinking that maybe all those romance books were literal when they said throbbing member. If you take your lover's cock, he said, you don't just hold it in your palm, you caress it, you stroke it. I mean, I'd been toying with his cock all evening through his pants, and, well, it was clear that he enjoyed it because he was already erect. The head was halfway out of its foreskin. I angled it up, holding the base. I ran my hand lightly from the base to the tip and then back. The skin moved up and then down, revealing his head. Kiss it, he instructed. And I did. Lick it from bottom to top. So I licked. Suck the head, but gently. And so I sucked. Henry showed me how to handle him. Soon his balls were in my hand. He taught me to cradle them ever so gently, to tug on them, to hold them up as I sucked, and later to pull them away from his body as he came. He showed me that spot just under the head of his cock. On an uncircumcised man, it's even more sensitive. Imagine if that's possible. He had me lick and kiss and suck there. He once got me to just lick that one little spot for the 25 minutes it took cheddar muffins to bake. And when he came on my face. It was an incredible fountain. So a little tongue action on my part, creating such a explosive effect. But that time, that first time, before I knew his cock, when I was new to his cock, he kept it really simple. He had me sucking and stroking together, one hand on his shaft, the other on his balls, kneeling on the floor in his kitchen in an apron. One not too different than the one I'm wearing now. He was my teacher, but he wasn't made of stone. He wasn't contained like men here often are. He gasped. He sighed. He moaned. He was present in his body and with me. I've met even more responsive men in my life since then. My grad student neighbor downstairs, for one. But given my experience, he was very expressive. And it was intoxicating. I didn't urge him on, like I would know how to do now. I didn't ask for his come or beg or whisper, relax. Let go. Don't come. Release. But I don't think that mattered to my baker's apprentice. He was kind and sweet. He had his hands on the side of my head, but not to control me. I've had that, and it's not my favorite. He caressed my head. Fingers in my hair, touching me the way he wanted to be touched. And I caressed his cock with my tongue, stroked his shaft with my hand. Some weeks later, he would lay me on my back on the table, my head hanging over, and he showed me just how far I could take him. But for this first time, it was as sweet and as gentle as anyone can imagine. I'd like to say the same for his cum, but in reality, when he came in my mouth, and Henry always came in my mouth if he could, I hated the taste, like a mouthful of Marmite, but worse. Even so, just like he told me, I waited. I showed him the cum, and then I swallowed. He named me Good Girl, and to this day, 20-odd years later, my pussy still tingles a bit when I hear somebody say it. Don't use that against me. When that was done, I was allowed to wipe my mouth and to rinse. Next time, said Henry, you clean me first with your tongue, and you kiss my cock, and you put it away, then you get up. And I did. It's a good student. So I did every time. Except one time in a back alley at Waterstones when the patrolling Bobby would have caught us if I hadn't been hasty in reorganizing my clothes. There were more lessons to follow. Henry was demanding, but giving too. He taught me the pleasures of having my pussy licked. Something he could do for as long as it took for a loaf of bread to rise. Not many men have that stamina now. He once had me coming and coming and coming in the kitchen. His roommate was home in his room for a change, and I had to keep a kitchen towel stuffed in my mouth, slouched in the wooden chair, Henry between my legs, trying not to get caught. And of course he fucked me. I mean, we made love. It's amazing. I wasn't pregnant when my mom met me at O'Hare later that winter because we were not careful. More like reckless. We spent those months baking and fucking, mostly in his kitchen because the bedroom was rather small. Occasionally, we were interrupted by his damn flatmate. Once, I was bent over the table, and Henry was just on the verge of coming when the latch started to turn. I had to whip around and swallow a mouthful of cum and get on an apron in the seconds available. In the event his flatmate never poked his head into the kitchen and the door slammed as he exited just moments later. Safe. We laughed. Honestly, I was a bit pissed that I'd missed my own chance at climax, but Henry, he was always a good support in these things, was soon on his knees licking and sucking and generally making amends. I shouldn't over-romanticize. It wasn't perfect. Some souffles fell flat, some tears were shed, and the moment of departure always hung over our heads. The British immigration system wasn't empathetic or interested in the heartache of two hopeless romantics. So I was going back to Hawaii, come hell or high water. But it also added spice to our time. We hungered for each other. We coupled in doorways, between water stones in his flat. The one time we made it to the Tate Modern, it was less Rothko and more romance in the between spaces. Always wanting more, never sated. We honestly wanted to drown on each other, consume each other. Henry had to go back to Lisbon, to a mother and a sister who missed him 2 weeks before I was due to leave. I recall the airport was crazy in the pre-holiday rush. This was before 9/11, so you could walk somebody all the way to a gate. We couldn't look each other in the eye on the train ride south. He held my hand. I had a tissue, unused. In the end, I didn't cry. That came later. It broke like a dam on me 6 months later. Embarrassingly, while in the front row of a lecture hall at Northwestern. But even then, an ocean away. I could still smell the yeast and the cinnamon and the clove from the shirt that I'd pressed my face into when we said goodbye. That's why I bake. To remember. So now, when people ask me about my London adventures, about all the wonderful things I was sure to have done or seen, I don't generally have a lot to say. I saw things, of course, but all of my focus and all of my memory is fixated on that kitchen, on that man, in that flat over the cafe. And that's why I bake. When I unmold my Madelines and when I turn out my turnovers, I'm reliving that beautiful fall with Henry when I was the baker's apprentice. I think I'm going to take something to that grad student downstairs. Think they'll like my outfit?